What's up, and welcome to another episode of the Scott and Ian Show on the SBL Podcast. And today, Scott and I get to sit down with the incredible Blue the Tiger. You're in for a real treat. I got to interview Blue for Base Space 2022. We had a great time, asked her back on the pod. She came and hung out with both me and Scott, and we had a ball. I first heard of Blue when she was a side musician playing with Caroline Polachek. She was up and away, right? And then pandemic just levels the playing field. Blue is, you know, in her apartment, decides to start posting on TikTok and just meteorically rose, and then has played with Chromeo, Jack Antonoff from Bleachers, and of course done her own thing. She's her own artist. Scott and I play this video for her, and it's so cool because I don't even think that she had seen the video, maybe, but we play it, and like, she plays two notes of her tune Vintage and the crowd erupts. It's insane. She is writing iconic bass lines, and she's a rock star on stage. She's singing, she's playing, and she's in her early 20s. It's so cool to see somebody with such passionate love for the bass. I mean, you guys, we get nerdy too. Oh, you don't think we get nerdy? You don't think she asked Scott and I about basses, and we ask her about basses, and you don't think we talk about maybe something secret coming up that she's got going on with Fender? Oh yeah, we get into all of it. We talk about pedals, we talk about touring, singing and playing, being an artist, being a content creator. Will she still record covers? Is she only doing her own thing? It is all in this interview. So hold on. It's so fun. Before we dive in, let me tell you about one thing going on at SBL this week. We have a mentor session coming up on Monday, April 11th with the great Todd Johnson. And with that, I'm done. I'm going to take it over to Blue, me and Scott hanging out on the podcast. Enjoy. All right. How about this? You had alluded to on that last interview working with Fender on a bass.
I don't know if I'm allowed to talk about it.
What's that?
I really want to talk about it, but I don't even know if I'm, it's not like announced.
Okay. There's a YouTube video, isn't there? Is there a YouTube video on Fender's channel or not?
I think I've spilled the tea like a few times, but they haven't caught it. Like, they haven't been watching that closely.
Oh my God. Okay. Sorry.
It's fine. I know. I think it's like, it's kind of out there. So I can kind of talk about it. Let me just do it. I don't care. It's fine.
Yeah. Maybe you've been doing some.
Maybe.
I'm like really excited about it, so I feel like I should just, you know, spill. Yeah. I just won't give too much details. But yeah, I'm working on really exciting projects with Fender.
And if you had been doing something with Fender, like, what might have that process been like?
It's been really fun. It's definitely taking a long time because I don't want to rush it. I mean, you can kind of guess what it is. But I'm working on a product.
I bet it's a bass.
It's probably a bass.
It's not a bass, is it?
A strap, like. It's been really exciting. They're so awesome to work with. I've been like, you know, working with them since I was like 17, or just like had a relationship with them since I was like 17. Yeah. I've had like the same rep there, Jason Klein. Shout out, he's the best. So they're awesome. They've been really, really great. So it's gonna be good. I'll say it's gonna be like revolutionary.
Oh, sick. Yeah. That's like Babe Ruth pointing to the homer.
Technology-wise, and what we're putting into the bass is like
double neck, whammy bar on both necks.
Yeah, there's inbuilt. There's a keyboard, key bass.
Yeah. Keyboard inbuilt envelope filter.
Yeah. It's like a class. You know, it's a classic like 4-string type vibe, but it's really cool and it's gonna be sick.
When I saw the Mono Neon one, like, have you seen the video that they did with Mono Neon? Like, when I saw that, I was, have you not seen it?
I haven't seen it, but I've seen his bass like online, but I haven't seen the video. They're so good at the videos that they do, and the marketing is like,
okay,
so good.
Yeah, the video tore my face off. I was like, that must have taken so freaking long to do and like research and get that stuff down. Like, if you had been working with Fender, would, you know, would they have followed like a similar, you know, could you let us know a little bit about how they might have, you know, storyboarded a video out or something like that?
Yeah. We haven't gotten to that point yet of all that stuff because we're still working on just getting the product done. I like have all these ideas. I'm excited to get into that part.
And what do they do? Are they sort of like, what shape do you like? Like what pickups do you like?
Yeah, there's like a design team and I kind of tell them what I like and what I'm thinking. And then they make a prototype and we go back and forth. And then I kind of see like an electronic model version of it. We kind of go back and forth on it, and then now they're making.
They don't send you sort of like a wooden.
They actually
like
did.
A wooden makeshift version of it.
They did.
They sent me. I really hope I don't get in trouble. It's fine. It's fine. They sent me just to see like the paint job and stuff. They sent me like they just painted on just like a wood body and just sent me the body like in the mail just so I could see if I like the
approve the aesthetic.
How long does something like that take?
It takes a really long time. I've been working on this for like we decided to do this officially like a year ago. So it's going to be like probably a total of 2 years until it
comes. Incredible.
I want it to be perfect, obviously. So if there's like edits, like I have to get the prototype and then I have to make edits and if there's anything I want
but
differently.
What happens if you change your mind? Like, and I'm asking that because I am a nightmare with stuff like that. In fact,
I'm so indecisive too. I'm like,
I want to get tattoos. The reason why I haven't got a tattoo is because I know that like, you know, 2 weeks after it, I'd be like, oh, I should have, you know, they should have made a different, whatever. But, and with basses, I'm exactly the same. Like, I'm sort of like in love with one bass. I'm like, monogamy and basses for me are just in dire straits with each other. It's a problem I've got.
Yeah. Cause I'll get obsessed with something and then I'll like kind of move on. But this one, I'm trying to make it super versatile. So it's not like, it's like anyone can kind of vibe with it. Like you can kind of do anything on it and it gives you all the different things, but it's also like what I, you know, what I personally, it's like my favorite parts about all my favorite basses basically.
Oh, fun. I can't wait to see it.
And it just looks like, sick.
Should we play a track? Should we play a little bit of a track? Because we might have, some people might be like, okay, let's hear what she can do.
They're like, why is she doing anything?
A lot of people know you, Blue. It's, really? I think it's just so fun. Right. Of course. Yeah. I just want to play this. Yeah. Scott, can you pull it up?
I just want to whip out my DJ chops and everybody listen out for my smooth.
Yeah, it's fun. Yeah.
My smooth fade as well. Listen out for the smooth fade.
Hell yeah. We're ready.
I go up, go down. Get pulled up, go down.
Ow. Seriously, ow.
Ow.
Samurai sword to the chest right now.
I got glitter on my teardrops. Kisses on the ground. Yeah, you're talking my ear off. Bringing me down.
What came first, the melody line, the lyric, or the bass line with that tune?
That one was the bass line. Usually they're all the bass line.
Really? First. Are you bass first always?
For the stuff, actually for the new stuff I've been working on, it's been like kind of a mix, but usually it's like the groove. Like I have to have a good groove, otherwise I can't really get into anything. Like it has to feel good for me first before
and
I can
where
like,
does anything. The initial bass line idea for you too, like, is that are you hearing it? You're walking around, you're hearing something. Like, where does that initial spark come from?
I think
you can even describe it.
Yeah, usually it's, well, I'll have to have, like, drums first. It's hard for me. Like, I'm usually just inspired by the drums and the tempo and however the drums are sitting, and then I kind of, like, put it to that, and sometimes I'll kind of have a thing in my head, like, okay, I want these sorts of chords or this sort of vibe or this sort of, like, reference track or idea, and then kind of go from there. But usually the stuff that kind of just, like, comes out of thin air is sometimes the best. Because you're, like, not even thinking about it. It's, like...
How are you capturing the ideas as well? Like, are you capturing the ideas on some sort of, like, you know, putting it through Logic at home or something like that?
Yeah. Like, I'll be in sessions with, like, producers, and I'll just be like, okay, record this, and then I'll record it. And then usually I go, like, that's, like, for writing, and then usually I go back. For Elevator, I didn't really, because I just liked the original sound of it. But usually I'll go back, and I'll, like, retrack all the bass stuff and put an extra... spice, because I don't like with Elevator, it was kind of cool, it was more like a loop, but for some of my other songs and the new songs I'm working on for my album, like, I don't really want anything to sound just like a looped 4-bar bass line. Like, I'll do like Got a it. Full take of it and put like some spice, so it sounds more live and more like you can kind of feel me in the song a little bit more. If you have the little ghost notes and all the little, you know, things, and I'll put in fills and I'll overdub like slap stuff, random
fun stuff. Yeah, like all the interest as the song moves along, it sort of develops.
Yeah, so it feels like you're actually like at a show.
Yes.
You know? I don't know.
Oh, no, I love it. Yeah. And I mean, can we, speaking of show, Scott, can you play that clip of Vintage?
Of course I can.
Mr. DJ? Mr. DJ, can you please?
Here we go.
Yeah. Check this out. It's so great. Just to see your show evolve.
I don't know if I know which one you're talking
about. Here we go.
That moment is so amazing.
That audience are really happy about that bass, that bass break.
listen. I wanted Scott to play the intro of this for a reason, because it's like there are not very many people on this earth that can play two notes of something and a crowd erupts. So that's Vintage, Blue to Tiger. You go boo doo. You play goo doo doo. Maybe three notes, and the place goes because they know what it is. How what's that feeling like?
It's sick. I mean, that's kind of just what I'm trying to do. Like, I feel like with all my bass lines, it's, you know, they're hooks as well. Like, I try to make it just as catchy as a melody, like vocal line too.
Yes.
So that's exciting for me. Like that people recognize the song just from that little intro is like so sick. I haven't even thought about it that way. And it was crazy. Yeah. That show was from 2021. That was like right when shows were just coming back. Oh. So it was such a, and it was like my first show like ever as like my own artist. What? Like, I was like,
are you serious?
Yeah, well, not my first show. I've been performing like forever, but I was always playing bass for other people.
Yes.
Like touring. I don't know, Scott, if you know, but I used to like tour with a bunch of people just as a bass player, like session.
Yeah.
For hire type thing. And then during the pandemic, I started putting out my own music and all that stuff happened. And then, but I couldn't tour while that was happening because it was COVID. So 2021, so I had like 2 years where I was like putting music out and gaining fans online, but never actually performing. And then that was like my first show, like technically
so was
ever.
That super weird. Was that really weird
to see? And I was like freaking out because I was like, it was so weird because I didn't. Like, I knew I had fans and stuff because I would see online, but you never actually know because you're not seeing human people there. So, like, the show, I played in New York and the show was, like, you know, sold out, whatever. But I was like, oh, like, no one's going to come. Like, I don't know. Like, even though it was sold out, like, I was so tricked in the head to think, like, no one was going to be there. So then when I walked out and everyone was there screaming, it was, like, the craziest feeling ever. Because it's also different if you're playing for someone else, it's obviously a very different feeling than, like, playing your own music that you're writing, and I'm like singing, and I'm, you know, front person, that whole thing. So
yeah, I think it's also really important as well, just for context for people, because I think that you're absolutely right. Even if you have got like X amount of however many followers on whatever platform, you know, there's like a slight disconnection, isn't there, in terms of, are these real people? Like, we know that we know they're real people, but when you actually get in a room and you move that audience and that relationship to an actual physical space, that's kind of mind blowing. And that's obviously what happens, but in your point, to your point, it's just super weird being in a especially when I look at that show. It's obviously it's packed, right? It's a packed show. It must have been an amazing experience for that to happen.
So second, it was like my hometown too, because I'm born and raised in New York, and that was like my first show. It was like at this New York venue that I always wanted to play at. Yeah, it was amazing. And then this on this last tour, that I just did in December, which was like a year later from that show. I got to like actually meet fans, because during that, the 2021 cycle, it was still like COVID. People were wearing masks even sometimes during the shows and stuff. And now it's not. Like, that's when I did this last tour. I got to meet a bunch of people and like chat with them. And that was even more special, because I actually like had face-to-face individual time with like some people. And they were like, just hearing people's stories about, like, there's so many bass players that come to my shows, obviously. I would like to think. That would happen. So cool. Just like hearing them say like that they started playing bass because maybe they saw something of mine, or just they're inspired to pick up an instrument. Just any of those little stories is like the coolest thing ever.
Wild.
And I brought up people on this last run. I brought up every show. I brought up like a fan from the audience to come and play bass with me. It was crazy. I had like 12-year-old kids. And it wasn't planned. I would just be like, does anyone play bass? And like, they would just raise their hand, and like, I would just like pick someone at random kind of. But oftentimes it was like young, like I had this like 12-year-old boy come up, and he like played the vintage bass line. He was like amazing. And he was playing with my grandkids. Like, he was so good. And I was like, oh my God. And we hadn't even played the song yet, but he like started going into it, and I was like freaking out. Literally like 12 years old, this kid. And then because I have like my drummer and my guitar player like playing. And then someone comes up and he just started riffing on that, and they were like going, it was like, it's just such a cool, like improvisational fun moment in the show. But yeah, I did that like every single show. I had someone come up, and it was really sick.
Oh, that's amazing. So fun.
Can you let everybody know? Cause you mentioned it earlier. You obviously sort of like play, like you were just you were like a gigging bass player, right? Side woman who like session type bass player. How did you originally get into that? And how did you transition to, you know, being an artist?
I guess it's an interesting path. Especially as like a bass player side person. Like, I don't know many people that go from that to doing their own thing necessarily, but I was just always playing. Like, I started playing really young at like age seven. My brother plays drums. He still plays in my band as well. We were just always playing, and I would just started to get hired. Like, there's just not many bass players in general. And I would just like always get hired. Like, when I was in high school, I was like playing with the kids at NYU in New York. And I would just play like I would play three times a week at these like, you know, small venues and work with different bands and stuff. And then I was doing that a lot. And then I started like touring when I was like 18. I got my first like touring gig.
And was that with Caroline Polachek?
No, it was with this other band. And it was like, you know, paid my dues doing that, you know, really like, you know, like Motel 6 vibes, like in the band, you know, like like driving all night, which was so fun. So I did that, and then I got a gig with these guys, the Knox, and they're like more of an electronic duo, but they had a full band for that that run, and that was like my first like tour bus tour. And at that point, I was at NYU, and I left because I was like, oh, this is a great opportunity, I should just do this. And then at the same time, I like always wanted to be my own artist. I just didn't really know like how to get there. And I didn't really sing either. So I started singing kind of at that same, it was kind of all happening at the same time, but I was like playing for a lot of people. And then I was also DJing and like bringing my bass to like my DJ sets and like shredding over songs. And people started to know me in New York from that. We started getting like sort of an audience from that, and I was like DJing like three nights a week too, and then like going to school the next day, like some crazy psycho. I just like didn't sleep for like 4 years, and then yeah, I was like DJing a lot, and I was like, oh, I think that really inspired me to start doing my own thing too, because I was like, I want like my own songs to play right now, like I want to like put in my own tracks. So I started learning production, and then I got into like Ableton and was making like edits of songs for my DJ sets. And then, yeah, I met these guys, the Knox, and I was like, oh, I want to start making my own music. And I started working with them, and they produced like my first few songs. And then I went on tour with them in their band, but I also opened as like first of three. Cool. But I was like doing like a DJ's. I was doing like a hybrid, like, and I had like two songs. So I was doing like a 30-minute like DJ set with bass.
Yes.
And like singing my two songs. It was kind of weird, but it
kind
of worked. Yeah, I was just getting the crowd going, but it was like a good practice for me. And then, yeah, and then I started touring with Caroline, and I was really getting into like the session stuff, and I was mostly in LA. And then I started getting a lot more gigs, like legit, you know, like session bass player gigs, because in LA, all the musical directors are there, and everyone, you know, if you fall into the certain scene, you can kind of like, you can just keep going off that.
Right.
Yeah, so I met like really good musical directors, and then I got hired for Caroline, and then I was about to do this tour for this other artist named Fletcher, and then the pandemic happened. So I was really hitting my stride as like a session person, and then started putting out my music.
So before we get into sort of like what happened during the pandemic, I'm sure that a bunch of people listened to this, heard you just say was in LA. It was really beneficial to know certain musical directors. And then once you can get in that scene, then it's, you're off to the races. Like just speak to that a little bit.
Yeah, that's interesting. There's such a scene there that I'm still getting like new to, because then I had to figure out my band. And I realized that like everyone found their band from, you know, the musical directors have this wide network of people that they like, you know, they go to and they work with, and there's these like classic go-to guys, but they also all have like gigs already, so you have to find like the right person that has time to like do your thing, because all the tours are happening at the same time too. And I think the Caroline thing, she just like found me on Instagram, and we had like mutual friends, so most of the gigs I've gotten are just through that. Or just social. Through like people kind of finding me, and like social and mutual friends and stuff.
Incredible.
But I think now, if I were really trying to go the session musician thing, I would just like, I would like be in LA and like try to get in with all the musical directors, because they have like a network of people. And then when they sign on to do projects with artists, most of the time, I think it's a lot of the time it's like the musical director kind of helping.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, and a lot of it is also personality. It's not always just
You can't be a dick.
You guys know that. Like, a lot of it is a lot of it is like, oh, like you're gonna be on the tour bus for 2 months with this band. Like, who's a good hang? Exactly. Who's a good vibe?
Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
So that's you know, there's a ton of great players always, but.
In terms of the musical director thing, Sean Hurley actually told me something similar when he moved to LA. He found that for him, it wasn't musical directors, it was producers. He quickly realized that the people that were doing a lot of the hiring were producers. So he said, I got really friendly with like producers. In fact, he got like the Robin Thicke gig, I think, that he got through a producer. And then that producer, you know, it went on to, you know, get him on a bunch of other gigs as well. So I think that finding out who's dishing out the gigs is it's a smart move.
Yeah, it's like it's totally like a networking thing. And now people ask me too. They're like, "Do you know any bass players?"
I bet.
For me,
you're a tastemaker now. Blue.
I like to think that. I know. It's definitely hard to find really good people, because the really good people are also always, they're booked up, you know.
Of course.
With the good gigs, but. Yeah, it's a really interesting scene to be a part of. And I'm like super interested in the musical direction.
Do you want to be a musical director? I mean, are you the musical director in your band?
Not necessarily. I work with like amazing people. I'm just like, I'm very passionate about putting together live shows. So I'm like really involved in the creative aspect, like the technicality aspect of it, and you know, putting the playback rig together and all that stuff. Like, I'm not so, like, I don't really care as much for that. Sure. But the creative aspect I'm really into. So I'll sit with the musical director and really like be like, okay, we should transition from this song with this, or like, how about this? And
yes,
I'm like
and
very
arranging
much,
it.
Yeah. I'm very much into the arrangement. And also like, I play a lot of like the guitar parts too on my song. So it's like, I kind of know, how everything goes down in the tracks.
Yeah.
So I like to, you know, like tune, like be involved in like telling the guitar player, like, okay, this tone is better for this part, or can you play this part, and we'll put this part in the track or whatever. But sometimes artists, like their whole band will rehearse and they'll just come the last day and like sing the stuff. But I'm also in the band. I'm like playing too.
You're the bass player.
Yeah. So yeah. I gotta be there. I'm there like bright and early. Like let's get,
and my I love that.
The drummer. Yeah. And then my brother's the drummer and he plays drum, like on the new stuff that I'm working on for my album. Like it's a lot of live drum stuff. So he's like playing all the parts and coming up with the parts.
Yeah.
So super tight knit, but yeah, I'm just like passionate about musical. I just think it's really interesting.
Oh, it's so interesting. And something too, we talked about this on Bass Blue, but I would love for you to share this on the podcast too. Just like you talked a little bit about that real vulnerable thing of like, oh, like you're hitting your stride, session musician, you're on tour, you're doing the thing. And then, oh, suddenly it all comes to a grinding halt. And for a lot of people, they just spiraled. They started to do something else. But instead, you took the land grab opportunity of social media and like started to post. And I would just love for you to talk a little bit about that process of like what was scary and then the success you saw in that journey of posting on social media.
Yeah, totally. I think for me, performing is my favorite thing ever. So when that stopped, I was like, I need another outlet that can sort of give me the same feeling.
Yeah.
And the only thing I could do was like perform from my phone. You think about it like that. And it's not in real time with an audience, but it's still a sort of exchange of energy, an exchange of something, you know, whatever it is. So I was like, okay, let me just do this and see, like, it's kind of giving me something to do and I'm still practicing and I'm learning and I'm getting better. And that's, I mean, looking back, that's how I think about it. I think at the time I was just like, I need something to do and this is fun and I should be like playing anyways. Right. And I used to do it a lot, like for my DJ sets, even that's like what I was doing. I was like shredding over like pop songs, just like in my DJ set and improvising and coming up with parts just as like a almost form of practice.
Yeah.
I was like, let me just do this for the camera and just see if people are vibing. And yeah, I posted my first one and it was like, people loved it, but it was, yeah, I wasn't expecting people to love it because the bass as an instrument is like, not as a, just people just don't know about it as much.
Sure. It's not a little unsung.
Yeah. It's like not as much in the mainstream culture. So when I was like slapping and stuff, people were like, oh, what is that? Like no one really understood. And I was also like slapping over, like my first like really big viral video was, I was playing like a slap bass line over like a Megan Thee Stallion song, like a rap song. And people were like, what is that? They're like, this sounds really cool to my ear. People were like, this scratches an itch in my brain that like I've never felt. But like, just people like, really know. So I was like, okay, I got to let them know. Like, it's educational.
Yeah. Well, it's like, also generational.
People don't know. Yeah,
because slapping is like, slapping happened obviously like, you know, in the 70s, really. I mean, late 60s, Larry Graham, 70s. And then it was really came like really prominent in the 90s. But if you weren't listening, then it really went out of fashion in the 2000s.
Let's bring it back, baby.
I'm trying to bring it back. I'm trying to bring it back.
You are bringing it back, Blue. You are.
And not like a, you know, subtle. Like in my songs, like I'm not, unless it's really necessary, like I'm not, you know, slapping all over the place. But I think for like the TikTok videos, it's interesting to hear the bass being used in a way that cuts through a little bit more, especially for the iPhone. I mean, this is such a like nerdy thing, but like it cuts through on the iPhone speakers more.
Totally.
So I just started
so smart. That's how people are consuming the content. You know,
no one is putting on phones.
Yeah.
And like, if I was like playing in Megan Thee Stallion's band, of course I wouldn't be like slapping all over. Like, of course it's, you know, what the song means. But I think for the, which was also something hard for me to like put my finger around because I was like, when I would put videos of me playing bass on Instagram and stuff, and I would be like, I need to play it exactly like how the record is. Like, I want to get really good at, like, because that's like the session brain in me. Like, you want to play exactly what the song needs and serve the song. Yes. And you don't want to go too crazy or put too many fill. Like, that's just not the type of player that I want it to be, of course. And then I'm like TikTok, like ripping like crazy stuff like that I would never do live. But it's like a different thing for me. It's more, I think of it more as like an educational, like showing what the bass could do and like bringing it to the forefront and showing people just like how it can be used in an interesting way. And it's also like they're like 15 seconds. So I'm like, okay, I'm gonna just like cram everything into this 15 seconds just to kind of like show people a different side of the instrument. And then when I'm putting my live show together and all that stuff, then I can really be like, okay, how do I really want to represent the instrument and bring it into my world? But
that's badass. Yeah.
So badass.
It's badass. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Fucking awesome.
Cool. Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Was there a moment in that experience, you know, the pandemic hit and you start putting videos on TikTok, was there a moment where you're like, oh shit, I need to maybe take this a bit more seriously and do, yeah, was there a moment where you were like, maybe I need to lean into this?
I think actually after the first video kind of went off, it was about the time that everything kind of shut down, and I was in London playing a show and I came back because everything shut down, and I was like, okay, this is something I should probably keep going, especially because the comments were so encouraging. And they're like, oh, do more, like do this song, and oh my god, I'm so inspired, I want to play bass and all this stuff. I was like, okay, I owe it to these people that are interested to kind of keep it going, especially during this dark time. Like, if it can spark joy in anyone's day for the 15 seconds, you know, that's amazing. So I was like, okay, I gotta do this. And it was like very healing and therapeutic for me, because I was like, okay, I can wake up and have something to do every day and it can be part of my routine.
And were you doing it every day?
I was. During the pandemic, I was doing it every day. I would like wake up and in the morning do one and post it, and then like work on my own music at night. So I would be like, okay, I did my like thing for the day that like feels like I'm like almost helping the world and helping myself.
Then like bass therapy.
It's like bass therapy almost. And then I can do my thing and focus on making my music. But yeah, I was doing that, or like every other day I was doing it. And then it got really hard for a while, cause I was touring obviously when everything kind of opened back up. And then I had, I was putting out my EP and one of my songs also went viral on the app, like separate of my bass, or maybe kind of in conjunction, but also went viral at the same time that I was like posting all these bass videos. So I was like promoting my music at the same time.
Got it.
Which was interesting that it kind of like coincided with everything. And then I was like touring a lot and I couldn't really do like the covers type thing for a second, but now I'm kind of getting back into it. Whenever I'm in one place for a while, I'll like get back into it. So now I'm back in it, but I'll go,
I love
like
that. I love that you still do it. I mean, because I think I was actually going to ask you about that. Like, now that you are obviously are a thing, you're your own artist, you're a thing, would you then not do covers anymore? But you still dig into it occasionally.
Yeah. I think for a while I was kind of like almost like sick of it. So I hope no one takes that. Like, I don't want anyone to be like, ugh, like whatever. But I was just really trying to focus on my own. It just takes a lot of time. And I was really trying to focus on my own stuff. But then I just kind of switched my perspective on it and was just like, people really love these, and a lot of people found me from them. And that's kind of where a lot of my fan base comes from, is like the TikTok stuff. I mean, it's a bunch of different avenues because I've just been doing stuff like forever. But the majority, I think, when I was on tour and I was at all my shows, like a lot of people would be like, oh yeah, I found you from this cover. And now they're there and now they listen to my music. So I'm like, it is helping, and people are inspired to start playing now. And I think I was just like, okay, this is like inspiring for people. It's educational and it's like fun. And I feel like I'm getting better probably.
I think that you're going to be like, you know, you and people like, you know, that are using that model that you're using. I think that that is going to be the new model, right?
Yeah.
Like back in the day, because we're old as shit, you know, back in the day, well, actually, you know, I'm like 45 this year, so I'm not old as shit. I think that what I've heard is that 45 is the new 25.
Yeah. That's right.
I'm just saying. Exactly, right? But I think that, you know, like back in the day, the model that people used was, you know, you, like get in a band and then you like, let's try and get signed and then, you know, and all of that shit, right, that people used to do. And now it's just not like that anymore. For the most part, it is, let's build up a social following, an audience that we connect with, and, you know, and we can find something to exchange. Hopefully you're giving them bass and joy and they're giving you their attention, right? So it's a mutual exchange. So, and then off the back of that, then you can grow your own projects and do killing live shows and stuff like that. So I think that what you're doing is the new model. It's the new model of becoming an artist, where it's sort of like, to a certain extent, you can really control it more than any other time. And I think that, like, I've heard people pissing and crying about it, like, honestly, because maybe it's hard for them. And I do think that there have people being caught in the crossfire, people that have, that aren't native to this new environment, this new model. So they are kind of have been schooled or really understood the old model, and it's been incredibly hard for them to transition into a new model. And I do feel for those individuals. I'm not saying, you know, I just feel for them, you know. That said, I do think, like, as an overall model, this is way better, because I think it's way more democratized, and I think that it gives people like yourself the, you know, there's no gatekeepers, and I think that that's great. Yeah. And I think there is downsides, but I think that there's a lot of upside, more upside than downside.
Yeah, and I get all the sides, and I'll talk to, like, all my friends about it all the time, because there was a time where I was, like, really down about it, and I had even found a lot of success on the app. So even for me to be like down about it, I was like, I can't imagine how other people feel. So
what
I totally get it.
What were you down about? What specifically were you down about?
I was just like, it really takes a lot of time and, like, mental energy. And I was just at a point where I was like, oh, like, I don't want to, like, spend 4 hours, like, or not even 4 hours, because maybe it doesn't take that long, but, like, just the editing and, like, figuring out the sound. Like, it's a lot of the technical part is, like, really frustrating. And then if you spend a lot of time on something and you post it and no one sees it, it's, like, can be really frustrating. But that's just, you know, that's just life. But I was just like, oh, like, I don't want to, like, spend time. Like, I want to, I'm an artist. I want to spend time making music, not playing other people's music. But then it was really just, like, a perspective change. I was just like, oh, no, okay, I'm going to, like, do this when I have time and I feel like it. I'm in a good headspace. I'm in a good mood. Like, I'm going to put some energy into this and keep it going, because it's a way for people to be exposed to the instrument, to find me. And then they'll find me, and then they find songs like Vintage, and they're like, oh, this bass sounds like the same bass on that video that I heard that I love. Like, now I really like this song, and now I'm going to go see how to play. So it always helps, and it always, like, adds to the whole fire of things. But yeah, I was like, it gets really, because it's just so saturated now, the whole thing, and there's so many people doing so many cool things that it's really hard to.
It's super competitive, isn't it?
It's crazy.
So competitive, and it's when I was doing it early on, there were like 6 musicians on the app, and we all knew each other. We're all friends, and we would all like text and stuff, and I'm still friends with them now. And we all talk about it. It's just it's really competitive. But I'm grateful that I have, like, a sort of niche that works for me.
Oh, for sure. And you have a thing and a lane. I think, like, yes, it's competitive, but I think what people respond to is, like, you being you and, like, doing your thing, you know, and playing the sounds that you like. Like, you have a sound, a touch, approach on the instrument that, like, when I hear it, I'm like, that's Blue.
Dude, that's sick that you say that, because that's, like, the goal, I feel like, for any player.
Oh,
it's like, I want people to recognize. Like, my favorite bass players, like, all know when they've, like, played on something. Like, I can kind of infer who it is.
Oh, for
which
sure.
is, like, what I, like, I want people to be like, oh, that sounds like Blue. Like,
yeah. Like, you, like, have, like, a real purity in sound. Like, your sound is like the Fender bass. You know what I mean? Yeah, like, when I hear you play. Yeah. Like, when I hear you play the top of Vintage.
Up. You should hit them up.
Hit them up. Maybe,
they might do something with you. Yeah. You never know.
But it's like I'm serious though. It's like a really good representation of, like, passive, classic, Fender bass. Like back when people used to call it like bass and they meant the upright bass and Fender bass, just sort of like we would say so Kleenex. Crazy. You have that in the UK, Scott? You say Kleenex for tissue or
got,
no?
Yeah, we got Kleenex.
Brand, yeah.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Like back in the day, it was like that's how you would distinguish. It was like bass and that meant upright and then Fender bass and that meant electric. And like when I hear you, Blue, it's like Fender bass. I hear that like that character and that like vintage bark in your approach. And I just think it's really cool.
Yeah, so, that's sick.
Yeah, it's happening.
Yeah. I did this, I don't know if you guys watch like Rig Rundown, like out of Nashville, but they always, so dude. I did one recently and, I was just telling them there, I was like, cause even for my live show, I'm like, I just like the sound of a clean bass, like just OG classic. That's the sound I like. Cause I'm like going through all my pedals and I'm like, oh yeah, this one I use for like four bars in one song. Like, I'm just like, I don't like any, like, you know what I mean? And I'm just like, and maybe I'll experiment with that later, but there's so much you can do with just like the classic sound. That's why I like Marcus so much, or like Marcus Miller so much, or even Victor Wooten. Like just they're not like doing anything. They're just using what's there. Like they're not, you know, there's no extra stuff.
Yeah.
But now I'm like, I say that, but then also like on my new record, like there's some songs with like really interesting bass tones. I'm trying to get into experimenting a little bit, but it's still the same player, so you know.
Come on now. I saw you on that Aguilar thing playing a couple of those new pedals. I saw
after I did the Rig Rundown, everyone was like, because I'm on the Rig Rundown, like, yeah, I don't really like use compressor pedals or like anything, like I don't fuck with that. And now everyone's like sending me compressor pedals to try to get me like, they're all like, no, try this one. I like it for the live show. I think it's fun to break it up, but I think there's also something really special about like doing a whole show with like just a one sound. Like I think it's sick. So
it is. Yeah. Because then you have to do the work. Like your line, like that has to be the statement.
Yeah, and it's in the
like some big sound.
Yeah, and it's in the fingers. Yeah. It's like you're really controlling everything yourself. And there's, you know, I use like distortions, like I use stuff all sometimes. But yeah, I just think like the sound of the actual player, like the, you know, fingers on the strings, just the classic is like best thing.
No, and it sounds like you were influenced by players like that as well, right? Like Marcus Miller, Victor. Like who else were you into when you were, or who are you still into?
Well, Bernard Edwards is my favorite of all time. And that's the next bass I'm going to get into. I really want like the 1979, like Music Man. Cause that's why I played on the Chromeo records.
And yeah.
I want this. Like, this is fire. I just love Bernard so much. So I was really into getting that sound. So I'm on the lookout for that. If you guys see anyone on see anything on Reverb, let me know. Send me the link.
You want a 79 specifically?
Yeah.
Oh, dude.
Don't worry.
He's getting out Reverb now.
We'll find you one, Blue. Don't worry.
It's hard to find. I found one and I was like messaging with the guy and he was going to give it to me. And I was like, but I wanted to try it before I got it because you never know. So I was like going to drive up to this guy's house in like, sounds a little sketchy. I was going to bring my brother. Like I wasn't going to go alone. Like he was cool. I checked him out. It was fine. I was going to drive over to his house like 2 hours away to like try this thing.
Incredible.
And I was really into it. And then like the day before I was about to go, he was like, you know, I had a change of heart. I think I'm going to keep it.
No.
And I was like, and he has never been played. It was like sitting in his closet. Like he's like not a player. He just like had one. Like never been played. And I was like, dude, I promise. Like I like sent him like my music. I don't know. I was just like desperate. I was like, I will really use it. Like for, it'll go to good use. Like I promise.
Like, no, yeah, I need to like help this bass fulfill its destiny.
Yeah, I was like,
this I will is, help it fulfill its destiny.
I was like, has a long life to live. Like promise. And he was like, no, I just think like I want to just keep it. And I was like, okay, honestly, I respect that. Go off. And then like 2 months later, he messaged me again and was like, I ended up selling it to these guys.
No. Yeah,
he ended up selling it. And he said he told the guys he was going to sell it to me, like name dropped me. Shout out Flex, name dropped me. And the guys were like, they couldn't believe it. They're like, whoa, you didn't sell it to her? Like, that's really messed up. So I kind of got him back.
But they bought it still,
yeah. He felt like really bad. He's like, I'm so sorry I didn't sell it to you. Like, I feel really bad. So it's fine. So good karma. Like, he's a nice guy.
It's all good.
But
wow.
I was really upset. I was like, that's really hilarious. Yeah.
Oh my God.
Ian and I were having this sort of like weird conversation just earlier today saying that like, because Ian's just got a bass. He's just got this like new Ken Smith that he was looking at. And he said, isn't it weird that like we don't own these basses? No. Like they're basically, we they're only going to be with us for a really short time.
Yeah.
And then they will, like, they're going to carry on without us, right? We yep. will yeah. like just get old or whatever and sort of like cease to exist. And these instruments are just going to go. They're all on their own journey. I freaking love that idea.
Yeah. We're just amazing. The steward of it. Temporarily, yeah. but that's some like 44-year-old stuff, Blue. You don't got to worry about that now. That's some of that like midlife crisis shit that'll happen to you.
No.
Like,
dude, it's not a midlife crisis. It's not a midlife crisis. Somebody did a really shit job over that. Whoever came up with that freaking midlife crisis shit needs a slap.
Yeah,
the reality is, it's a midlife awakening. It's yes, midlife it's awakening. Yeah.
I like that. Yeah. I have awakenings every day.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I feel old all the time.
I have a 79 Stingray.
You do?
Yeah.
You want to sell it? Are you trying to sell it?
Maybe. Let's chat. I think when are you? Exciting. I mean, Blue, like, yeah.
Wait, where do you live? Where do you live? I'll drive to your house.
When are you next in Minneapolis?
I actually might be there in April.
Okay, I'll bring it to the show. You can play it and see what you think. Cool.
Oh my God, I'm so excited.
You got just talk. Hold up. I'm talking for a sec.
So anybody listening,
excited right now.
Yeah, I'm sort of like as he said that, I was like, oh, is he going to regret this?
Yes.
I'm
not sure. Dude, that's the one. Like that's the one.
Yeah, it's the sunburst one, isn't it? Yeah,
it's sunburst. Cool. Yeah.
Oh, that's the one.
Maple, and it's
that's
you know,
exactly
yeah.
the one. That's exactly the one. Oh my! I'm gonna like fly to Minneapolis like tomorrow.
Yeah,
I'll just come. We'll like at lunch. We'll just hang, and then yeah, I'm gonna text you next week and be like, oh, I happen to be in Minneapolis. It's so crazy, like, yeah. so random. I just happen to be here. They're really hard to find. The good ones are really like hard the to real find. The real ones. Yep.
Is there going to be like a really awkward exchange when you guys are together? You'll be sort of like,
I'm going to be like, so dude, like, what's that?
Yeah. Baby? So what happens next?
Yeah. No pressure.
No pressure. Oh my God. Yeah, no I got to have it.
My birthday is coming up next week. Just in case you're like, you know, thinking, since we're besties.
That's amazing. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Hey, for real though, when you're in Minneapolis, I'll bring it to the show, and you should just play it on a song or two, or just in soundcheck or whatever. Like, yeah, for sure.
Sick.
Amazing.
Yeah, and then we'll take it from there.
That's so sick.
So Bernard Edwards, is it Bernard or Bernard? In the UK, if Bernard Edwards was born in the UK. He would be called Bernard, which...
Bernard.
Bernard, yeah. He would be sort of like 90% like less cool. Bernard yeah. Edwards. But anyway, so Bernard Edwards is like, was like your top guy. Who else were you into?
He's like my favorite. James Jamison. I was like into all the Motown stuff. Classic. I mean, Larry Graham, of course.
Yeah.
I watched that like instructional video of Larry Graham like, all the time. You guys know which one I'm talking about? It's so good.
Which one? Christy White.
Pop is the snare, and then he's like, wearing all white. He's just so cool, like so iconic. I wrote a paper about him in school, like about slapping.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah, I was like,
have
so
you met
cool.
him, Blue? Have you met him?
No.
Oh, you.
I was a freak.
I hope you. That'd I hope you sick. Can.
Oh my God, I met.
He's in Minneapolis, right?
Today. He's in Minneapolis. Yeah.
Oh my God,
so we do two things. We've got two things.
I have a trip to make. Oh, the Stingray. That would be a crazy dates trip. That would be like a crazy. I would need like a week to recover from that whole experience. I met Verdeen White the other day, and he was like,
I saw that on your Insta. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, the night I just like straight, and I like never really do that. I like went straight up, went up to him, and I was like, dude, I gotta say hi. I was like, I'm a huge fan. Like, I play bass. Like, I'm such a big fan. He was so nice and like talked to me for a while and was just like the sweetest person. He was like, let's take pictures. And I was like, oh my God. Like, of course.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. And he was like, you gotta come see me play sometime. some time. I was like, dude, I've seen Earth, Wind & Fire play. Like, of course, like, what? anytime. I was like, let me know. He like gave me, like, take my number. And I was like, oh my God, like, what? So okay. Ivor Dean White's number is like kind of a fuck, kind of sick. Obviously, so him. It's crazy. I was like, you're so cool. Him, yeah, Marcus. Those are like, I mean, Michelle De Yocello.
Michelle. Oh, yeah, of course, yeah. Yeah.
Incredible. And when I was getting into, dude, and talk about singing and playing at the same time, it's insane. Like, crazy. Because the parts are insane. Yes. And they're all just so rhythmic. I'm like, that's crazy. Like, because I was also, when I was like learning how to sing and put my show together, I was like really in a, I was like, how am I going to perform and like play and sing at the same time? It's so hard for bass.
I remember you saying that.
Yeah, I remember. Yeah, we were talking about it, right? It's very underrated how difficult it is.
Yeah, it's way harder than guitar. It's like way harder, isn't it?
Way harder, just because the syncopation of the parts and then singing, it's just like, it doesn't, it's very like, whatever, people do this thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and then I was watching videos of her doing it, and I was like, okay, she's so good. Like, she can do it. Like, it's possible. Like, there's a way.
Yeah. Yeah, she's like the extreme, isn't there? There's some sort of like videos from the 90s where like Jojo Mayer on drums, and I think I can't remember the guitar player who lives up in Boston, he's on it. It's freaking extreme, like
it's insane,
crazy.
And then she also, I saw her play in New York one time, and she has another bass player up there with her, so she can like have some songs where she just sing, which is also really sick. Like,
it's that's David Dyson, right?
I think, yeah, I don't know. Or like
David
Yoshi.
Dyson did
Yoshi.
It. And okay. Yeah.
Yoshi.
There are a bunch of.
Yeah. There's a bunch of people who play with her, I think. But she, yeah, she's amazing.
I
and
just
then, like,
poo my pants. That would be poo your pants time. If I was, I was like, if you got hired from her to play bass, I'd just be like,
oh my God, I would like freak out. I would be like, oh,
yeah.
Like, I would be like, no. I'd be like, you should just play. Like, why am I? I'd be like, you should play.
I mean, I've consumed so much of content of her, like, with other bass players, a bunch of other players. And the crazy thing is, she'll be with these amazing players and taking nothing away from them, nothing.
Yeah.
When she's playing, she starts the tune, and then, like, she takes the bass off, and it goes to the other player, and she puts her bass down, and it's never quite as good.
It's never quite as good, is it?
No.
Isn't that strange? Yeah, like, she's just got this sort of, like, vibe.
Ferocious.
Yeah, she's really good. But that's even so special that she's able to do that.
I know.
Like, that she's able to, like, have another person up. I don't know. It's just, like, it's cool.
Would you ever do that, Blue?
I would totally do that. I would totally do that down the line. I think that would be really fun. That'd
be awesome. Have you ever done a gig without a bass? Would it be weird stood without a bass?
Kind of weird, yeah. I mean, I've done songs where I'll just like sing and just put the bass down, or I'll like, I'll play guitar on something. But then I'll like pick up the bass again, and everyone's like, woo! Like, I'm like, I don't think they want to. And I'm like, don't worry, guys, it's still here. Like, it's fine. But yeah, it's just like part of, you know, it becomes like part of your body at some point. It just kind of becomes like an extension.
When you're singing with the bass, when you were like learning how to do that, would you attach certain syllables of a phrase when you sang it with certain notes? Is that how you ended up doing it?
Yeah, that's how I ended up doing it. I would,
yeah,
I would like really slow it down, and I'd be like, okay, I'm singing this syllable at this note, or like playing this syllable on this beat. I'd be like, okay, this word comes after this line, like this riff or whatever. You know, just very like super. Super small dose of like just breaking it down really, really slowly, and then I would kind of just like get the baseline like super ingrained in my body, like just second nature, so you don't have to think about it, and it just kind of plays without you thinking about it, because then you can think about the singing, and it's like you're basically only thinking about one thing, because the bass is just part of your system already.
Right.
Does sometimes the vocal line inform the bass as well, in that, like, if you listen to all the Police stuff, right, that Sting sang on, like, so much of it, he's actually singing in the gaps of the bass, right? He'll play something, and then he'll sing, right? Have you found the same thing when you're writing?
Yeah, totally, yeah. And now I'm starting to write, like, with the bass in hand, so it's, like, it feels more cohesive, like, everything's kind of working together.
Yeah.
But my first EP is, like, I would just, like, do the bass part and then, like, put it down and, like, sing and come up with stuff over it. But then I'll be going back to like, learn the songs for my record. I'm like, oh my God, why did I make this so complicated? Like, what am I doing?
Yeah,
Yeah, but
I remember too. You said on that first interview that like you had a moment where you like cried, where you were
I was like, I'm not gonna be able to do it. I was like, I'm not gonna be able to perform. Yeah, I was really freaking out. It was bad. And then I got over it. Yeah.
How'd you get over it? Just work?
I just was like, I can do it. I was like, there's a way to do it. I was like, other people do it. There's a way. You just can't be lazy about it. You just got to do it. Yeah. I was like, you just got to perfect it. Because I wasn't always, when I first started like playing slap bass, like I couldn't do it for a long time. Like it's really hard. Like those new things when it's just like a complete new technique, it takes a while to get it.
So long.
It takes ages. Yeah. I changed my slap bass technique just like 18 months, 2 years ago. I changed my slap technique. It took me at least a year to feel comfortable to rewire
your brain. Yeah, it's really hard. But I was like, okay, let me just like treat it like that. It's just like basically a new instrument type thing. You just got
like a drum.
Yeah.
How long did it take you to get used to get comfortable with it? To get to a point where you're like,
probably like a few months. Like, I think. But I would just go song by song, and I'll be like, okay, I'm just going to practice this song for like a few days straight and just like practice the bass. I would just like sit there with the click track, practice the bass part for a long time and kind of like mumble the words on top just so I can kind of feel how it's sitting.
How it's going
to
feel.
And then just to get a feel. It's all about the feeling, really. It's like if you kind of just know how to like move. I don't know. It's very physical, the whole thing. Like where you're, how you're standing, even how you're standing too. Cause I learned how to sing and then I would start singing with the bass on and my whole like voice would change because the way you're standing, you know, if you're like postures like this, or if you're standing in a weird way, it completely affects how you're breathing and how you're singing. So that was also like a challenging thing. I had to learn how to like the physical part of it, like being strong enough to like hold the instrument and project is like very difficult. So that was a whole thing I had to get into. But then that was kind of nice that I didn't have to perform right away. I like kind of had some time to practice that before I actually had to go out and like perform. But that's still something every time I have to add a new song, like I really have to sit with it and learn the part. And now it's faster. Now I can, you know, like in like a day kind of get it down, but because now it's kind of the muscle memory is kind of there, but
yeah, you just
I still have to sit with it.
It's so cool to hear you talk about that. Because like, you know, anybody goes online and sees your show and just sees like the rock star front person that you are. I mean, you're like, you are outdoing it, like serious rock shit. And it's so cool. And I think that sometimes a lot of people then are like, oh, well, she just has it. Like it just comes naturally. Oh, she's just got it.
So much practice.
Yeah. And it takes work, right?
I'm like, damn, if they only knew how much I sat there. Like, no, but it's the thing. I mean, anyone who plays an instrument or who does anything, I think it's like they all, you kind of know how hard it is.
Right.
Even like, yeah, just like Scott, shout out to you. Like I learned so much from your videos, like for real.
Okay.
Like, because I would just sit, because you had such good, like, forget-me-nots. Like, I learned that from your video and hair.
Oh,
I learned from. I remember I DM'd you, like, really early on. It's so embarrassing. Like, I literally.
What did you? Where, on Instagram?
I DM'd you, like, when I was so young, and I was like, oh, my God. Like, I just learned. Like, it was so bad. Don't look at it. Don't look at it. It's embarrassing. It's embarrassing. I'll find it, but it's embarrassing. But, like, I learned
I'm
so
going
much.
Going back.
No, it's like, so embarrassing. I sent you a video of me playing it. It's so bad.
Oh, that's but, like, so I cool.
It was kind of cute, actually. No, it's shout out, Scott. I'm a really big fan, so this is very cool. Thank you for having me on. This is really sick. No, I'm, like, freaking out. I just, like, didn't want to say because I was like, I'll just play it cool. But, you know, I was like, no, I'm, like, a really big Scott fan. Like, I'm a huge fan.
Yeah.
No, they're for real. Like, I'll just take. They're so good, and it's really hard to find really clear. You're so good at teaching and explaining, and your passion really shines through, which I think is easier to like. No, it's like easier to. It's easier to like learn when someone's like passionate about it teaching. You know.
Amazing. I'm taking the compliment. Just so you know, I am the freaking worst at taking. I am like a stereotypical English man. I'm sort of like, pay him a compliment, and he just goes.
No, but for real. Because that really helped.
I'm the worst.
No, that really helped me because it's hard. Like those lines are so difficult to learn and they're so intricate. Like forget me nots. Like you
it's
can
a,
play
it's
it.
It's a beast, isn't it? Yeah.
It's a beast, and it's like the feel is really hard. Like just the notes and whatever is one thing, but it's really like the feel and how it's sitting in the track that's really hard to grasp. Yeah. And you just did a really good job of breaking it down and like explaining it. And same with Hair too. Like that whole song is really about the feel and like the timing and how it's like.
It's the best, isn't it? It's so the good. Best.
Ever. It's crazy. So
it's the
crazy.
Best.
And I would
drums come in halftime. Like, you're like, holy.
Yeah, I know. I'm like, dude. Yeah, but like those songs, like I would sit and practice those for like days and days and days. Like, like I still don't think I have Forget Me Nots like 100% down. Like, it's that's
no, me neither.
Crazy.
Me neither.
Yeah, I don't think anyone will ever. And I remember I played for so Jerry Barnes, who now plays with Nile Rodgers, in Chic, who like now plays instead of Bernard. I don't know if you guys know him. You guys gotta check him out if you know him. He's like the best bass player I've seen like up close, like jam.
Really? Cool. Yeah.
Amazing. Like, but he was like kind of my mentor, or he kind of still is. Like I still chat with him all the time, but I would like, he would like be in the city and we would like go hang out. We would jam and I'd be like, oh yeah, I'm like working on Forget Me Nots. And I like thought I had it down. And he would be like, oh, play it. I like play it. He's like, yeah, that's almost it. He really gets close. And I had practiced for like 3 months. Like I was like really deep in this line and he was like, yeah, that's like almost right. And I was like, fuck. So I just really difficult, but yeah. So I would just I would practice so much, like just a lot.
Do you get to practice anymore? Do you do that anymore?
I wish I did more. Like really just get into like the, I mean, I play all the time. I play a lot. So,
yeah,
you know, it's,
yeah,
which, you know, there's a difference for sure, but, I should practice.
I think more. The seasons, for me, the seasons, right? Seasons of your life that you're like, oh, like, I'm going to work on this thing. I'm going to, you know, it's hard, whatever. Totally. You get inspired to do it. At least that's what I'm like. I'm kind of like up and down all the time.
Yeah, totally. And right now I'm in like writing mode and album mode. So I'm more in like the creating process. And then when I get back into like rehearsal mode for my shows and tour and stuff, then I'll get back into practice mode and I'll just practice my own lines really hard. Like I'll just really get into
Forget Me Nots. We can send videos back and forth between ourselves trying to play that freaking line.
I don't know how to, like it's just the feel is just crazy. Just crazy.
Yeah. Have you seen him play it live as well? The worst thing is about it is that there's just like no effort. Zero. It's just kind of just he's playing and that really tricky da-da-da-da-da-da, you know, that really fast thumb thing.
Yeah.
He just like nothing. Just like
crazy.
He's just not thinking about it. He's freaking awesome. I randomly met him in Germany. I was in the I was like proper fanboy moment. Mm-hmm. And I'm generally really terrible in those situations. And I did not disappoint myself. I was totally terrible. But anyway, so I was sort of like, I made a coffee with him. We're making a coffee together. And I was like, ready, Freddie Washington? And he was like, yeah. And I was like, sick. Cool. Yeah.
He like wrote that. I think he has like writing credit on that song, right? Because didn't he write that part is like, you know, the song, I feel like.
Right.
It's so important, yeah.
Yeah, I'm saying, how do you come like up, even from, like, a writing, I think that's also why I'm so inspired by that song, like, from a writing standpoint, the way that bass line fits with the track is just crazy.
It's crazy.
Like, to write
it's so
that,
signature.
Like, I'm like, where is your brain? Like, that's sick.
Yeah.
Like, how's your brain so working like that? But, yeah.
It's crazy. So fun to hear you talk about the classic stuff with all this respect and admiration. And it just like, it's so cool, Blue. Like you're an ambassador for the instrument, but you're also, of course, your own artist and you're doing your thing. You're making music the way you want to, but you have all this respect for, you know, the people that came before and the stuff you came up doing. And it's just like, it's really endearing and amazing. Thanks. So cool.
Yeah. Ambassador for the instrument. 100%.
Damn right.
That's what I was thinking before. When you were talking about, when you were talking about it earlier, sort of like you were helping people discover the bass. I was like, fuck yeah, this is awesome.
An ambassador.
Like I need to help people discover more bass. I mean, I haven't even thought about doing that. I was like, this is amazing. Yeah.
No, you do for sure. You do for sure.
Well,
like being out there.
I think there we are.
Cool. Yeah, it's just a cool. I think. I mean, especially during the, because I talk about it with Fender all the time, and they're like, no, the like the purchases for bass and guitar too, but like just went up crazy during the pandemic because everyone was at home.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. That's even just so wild. Cool to hear. Just to like, just the. Yeah, getting into something physical and just like not being on the screen all the time and just like actually playing an instrument is just awesome. So.
Oh, it's the best.
Yeah, 100%. Where do we send people to? Yeah. Where do we send people to find out about you, to stalk you?
Yeah, I mean.
But side note, please don't stalk Blue. But you know what I'm saying.
Yeah. Yeah. Everything, just like Blue to Tiger, everywhere. Yeah. Spotify. Check out the tunes. Follow me on Instagram and TikTok.
Damn Twitter, right.
Whatever. It's Blue to Tiger. It's my name everywhere. So check it out. But yeah, exciting stuff.
I can't wait to see the show.
So I forgot to hear the album because there's some really cool bass stuff on the record. Like really cool like bass tones that I got really deep into making like a really cool tone for some stuff.
Let's hang again after the record is out and talk about some specific sounds, right? You know, it'd be so fun. We have been doing this thing.
When the Fender thing comes out, whatever that is.
Oh, what? Yeah, allegedly.
Yeah, whatever that is, we could do.
If it does.
Yeah.
Yeah. We've been doing this talk show where we have people and break down bass lines and hang out and like in person. It would be so fun to do that with you.
That'd be crazy. Yeah.
Where are you based? Are you in New York?
I'm in New York right now. I'm mostly in LA though, but I'm back and forth all the time, just New York and LA. So.
Well, we're going to be coming over this year and doing stuff in New York and LA, probably in both actually. Like we did one with Guy Pratt, who was the bass player with Michael Jackson, Pink Floyd, Madonna. We released something a week or so ago with him. We've got one coming out with Henrik Linde from Dirty Loops. We've got another one coming out with a great rhythm section, a guy called Rob Malarkey and Richard Spaven on drums. And that was like, we just recorded three of them just to see if people were into it. Right. And it seems that we've only just released one. They're really into it. So the plan is ideally to come over to the States this year and record a bunch more. So it'd be wicked if you come over and, you know, we could get you do the talk show. How can you not be on a talk show? Right.
I love it.
We get to hang and stuff. It'd be wicked.
Dude, I love that. I'm like down for anything. I love you guys. Done. I'm big fans. I'm like actually big fans.
So. Well, the feeling is mutual, I'll just show you one more time before we go. I'll bring this out to the show.
I like each other or something. Oh my god.
I'll bring this out to the show.
I'm like checking flights. I'm gonna check flights. I'm gonna check if I'm there in April.
Yeah, we'll do it.
That's perfect. Let me check. I hope. I'm like crossing my fingers. I'll just come for like the weekend. It's so fun there.
Perfect. It's amazing. Just
that first app or Fine Line.
Yeah, Fine Line. Fine Line's there. First app. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Great venues.
Yeah. Prince, oh yeah. I know. OG. It's a great town.
He's one of the best. Like people never talk about that enough. He's like one of the best.
Yeah.
Scary killer.
It's literally scary. Yeah. He's like, I'm like, it's literally psycho that you can be so good at every instrument. And it's like, it doesn't feel like he's a guitar player playing bass or like a drummer playing. Like he feels like a bass player playing bass. It's insane.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yes.
He's amazing.
Crazy.
So guys, just want to say thanks for listening. Obviously go check out Blue to Tiger and all of the places, TikTok, Instagram and Spotify and all that good stuff. Thank you, Mr. Ian Allison as well.
Oh,
and take it easy guys. We'll see you next time. Thanks Blue. Bye.
Thanks guys. Peace.